Hello, everyone. Welcome to H10 Hanshin Tigers English News. I am your host, T-Ray, and today, for me, is Monday, March the 28th. How are y'all doing? The baseball season is underway. It's an exciting time of year, is it not? For those of you who missed it, the Tigers played their home opener at Kyocera Dome against the Chunichi Dragons this past weekend, and we're going to talk all about that in a little bit. Before we get to that, I just want to share a little bit of stuff of what's been going on in my life personally. One is that last Wednesday, my wife and I celebrated our fourth wedding anniversary, so congratulations to us. I dare not pat myself on the back, but I think so far it's been an amazing 4 years. So if you're listening out there, honey, which I'm pretty sure you're not, congratulations and thank you for 4 great years. Other than that, I guess, I'm just wrapping up my spring break here as I'll be heading back to work in a few days. And what else is happening? Yesterday was Easter, so I was off to church like a good boy, and actually I was the interpreter at church, so I was standing up on stage and sharing in English what the pastor was saying in Japanese. So for me, that's one of the fun things that I get to do every now and then at church and just in my life in general is interpreting, translating, stuff like that. As you all know from maybe checking out the H10 website, www.thehanshintigers.com. I tend to translate articles when I get time, especially articles that I find interesting and that I think you might find interesting as well. And then on top of that, I tend to read some books in Japanese, and then while I don't translate them, I definitely try to give a little bit of a summary and a little bit of a review of whether or not the book was insightful or not. Speaking of which, I am reading Tomoaki Kanemoto's first book called Kakugo no Susume, which is kind of like prepare and proceed, I guess, in English. I'm still not done reading it. It's taken a lot longer than I hoped. But once I get that done, I will be posting a review on that as well. Okay, so on today's show, like I said, we've got a couple of guests, and I'll be introducing them in just a little bit. After that, after we talk about the opening series, we are going to be talking about the Yomiuri Giants, as we did not get to do a proper preview for them this spring. So stick around, we'll be back in just a little bit. All right, on today's H10, we have got two guests that have never been on the show before, and it is my great pleasure to introduce both of them to you. I will introduce my buddy Joe first, and he has been following on H10 for a good while on the Facebook page. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Well, it's good to have you, and tell the good folks where you're calling in from or where you're at right now.
I'm calling in from Pennsylvania in the United States.
Right on, right on. So how did you get interested in the Hanshin Tigers? Like, have you ever been out to Japan, or how did you become interested in them?
Yeah, I actually spent a year in Japan in my junior year of college doing a study abroad in Tenri in Nara Ken. So okay. I had spent the fall in Japan and didn't really get into baseball. But then The spring came, and I was one of my friends invited me to a game, and that first game was Kanemoto's three at bat home runs. So I was hooked from the start. So I was always a big Aniki fan. So I went to, I think, 20 games that season.
Wow.
And nice. So I've been back a couple times to go see baseball since, but ever since then I've been following it on a daily basis. So
very cool. If I'm not mistaken, then that was the 2010 season. Is that right?
That was the 2009 season.
2009, pardon me. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So pretty cool stuff. And so who was your favorite? Well, okay. Aniki was your favorite player back then. Do you have a favorite player on the 2016 squad?
I'm going to have to go with QG because he's back. He lit up the place when he went out on the mound, to close all season that season. So it's really good to see him back with the team this year. And hopefully he can, have a good season as a starter.
Absolutely, for sure. And we'll get to that in a little bit because, as many of us know, he started Sunday's game for the Tigers. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. One more thing quickly before we jump to our next guest, Joe. Do you have any plans to come to Koshien or to the Kansai area anytime soon?
maybe not. Maybe towards the end of the season, we'll see. But I'd like to at some point, but I got, you know, a wedding coming up and trying to save as much money as I can. So
that being your wedding or somebody else's?
My wedding, yeah.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
So that's great. If you don't mind me asking, when is the wedding?
We're thinking April of next year. So
okay. Yep. All right. Right on. Well, great. I'm excited for you because, you know, I'm somewhat of a newlywed. I've been married for 4 years now and, yeah, life is good. So I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
All right. Well, let's move on. Our next guest that we've got with us is Patrick, and he is also coming at us from America. Welcome to the show, Patrick.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you on the show, and really it's an honor in a sense because I've been listening to you do guest appearances on other shows or reading columns or whatever from you. You know, you've been on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast, I don't know how many times. Do you know how many times?
No, I stopped counting. I don't 10 or so.
Okay. Well, that's excellent. And if those of you, if people out there don't know who Patrick is, he's got his own kind of website and Twitter account where you are NPB Tracker, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, that's right. MPBTracker.com and at MPB Tracker on Twitter as well.
Okay. An excellent guy to follow if you want a lot of tidbits on NPB overall, news things, different opinions, so on and so forth. So Patrick, I'm kind of going to ask you similar questions to what I asked Joe. You know, you became interested in NPB, but obviously you're in the United States now. Were you also in Japan at some point in your life, or?
Yeah, well, mine's a long story. I first became interested in Japanese baseball in 1994 when the strike canceled the American World Series, and the local cable station showed the Japanese Nippon Series instead.
Oh, really?
And so I was kind of hooked since then, and about 6 years later, in 2000, I was also a foreign student at Kansai Gaidai University in Osaka, and then I taught English in Japan for a few years after that. So this is going back to 2000 to 2003, and so I've moved back to America since then. But I visit Japan every year, so it's just become part of my life.
Okay, so if you were at Kansai Gaidai, obviously you were in the area where the Hanshin Tigers play. Were you a Tigers fan at the time, or did you have another team that you already liked before you got here? Or tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I already liked Oryx before I arrived in Japan because of Ichiro.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And they happened to be in the old Blue Wave team happened to be in Kobe, which is not too far from where Hanshin plays, of course. So really, all of the Kansai teams: Oryx, Kintetsu, and Hanshin.
So, okay. Yeah. Excellent. And how has following NPB gone for you since returning to America? I mean, obviously you've got the handle NPB Tracker, but I mean, how do you track? Like what's your system or how closely do you track NPB?
Well, so at first, you know, I moved back to the States in 2003. And so at first I would just buy Shukan Baseball at Kinokuniya in San Francisco all the time. Uh-huh. So that was the first way. And then over the years, games became more available online. So it's a lot of Pacific League TV and a lot of, you know, Justin TV streams from a few years ago. And now more games are available on YouTube. So the internet has really made it achievable, although I don't get to see the games in real time live. I usually watch them the following morning.
So right.
It's doable at this point.
Yeah, certainly though being on the West Coast is a bit of a handicap, as I guess with the time difference that would put games at what, the middle of the night where you are, I guess.
Yes, I remember during Yu Darvish's scoreless streak, I was waking up at 2 a.m. all the time to watch his games. So maybe a little too obsessive.
Well, that's for a pretty good cause though. I mean, that's a guy that was worth following certainly in his NPB career. And, you know, hopefully he can turn things around for the Rangers this season. So do you kind of extend your following into Japanese players that head over to MLB or?
I used to, but there's only so many hours in the day. So, so I don't really pay much attention to American baseball at all anymore. Really just have to choose. So I choose Japan.
Right. You know, honestly, I'm kind of in the same boat as you in that sense. I was a big MLB follower and I was a big MLB fantasy baseball player. And I decided that last year was just the end of it because as I started to follow the Tigers more closely and start to report more frequently, I just could not put any time into following the American game. And I just find the Japanese game kind of appealing. So, Yeah, it's interesting. I'm glad to have you on the show, and let's move right on forward, and let's talk a little bit of Tigers before we move into other segments. So I want to talk to you guys about the weekend series. Obviously, the opener of the 2016 season, and the Tigers were hosting the Chunichi Dragons at Kyocera Dome because of the high school baseball tournament that's taking place at Koshien. So in game one, by the way, did you guys catch that game one on TV or streaming or anything like that?
So far, I've only seen highlights. Joe, how about you?
Yeah, I caught probably the first half of that game and then had some stuff come up. But, yeah, no, I think I caught the better half of the game, I guess.
Certainly, yeah, you're right, Joe, because the Tigers actually, after the fifth inning, got no hits and just one walk. And so if you stayed along until then, you caught the better part of it for the Tigers. So Hanshin brought Messenger to the mound. This is the third time in his career and the second straight year that he has opened the season for the Tigers. And he, you know, he made declarations through the offseason, probably, you know, the media kind of had to coerce it out of him or were trying to, you know, get some kind of bold statement from him. But he said that he felt like he could throw a complete game. He felt like he was ready for it and he was worthy of it. And certainly that first inning, you know, he struck out two of the three guys he faced, and he induced a grounder to Araki, and the first inning looked great. And it really did look like Randy could go the distance and maybe, you know, pitch a real gem. And on the other side of thing, actually, the Tigers in the bottom of their inning going up against Ono, who they really struggled against last year. I believe he had a 0.5 or a 0.9 ERA against the Tigers last season. They opened with a hit by Takayama. Now, an interesting story. I don't know if either of you guys read this or heard this in the press, but Ono, I guess, had made the declaration that he was going to pitch. His first pitch was going to be a fastball, and he was kind of daring rookie Takayama to go for it. And Kanemoto kind of gave Takayama the green light. Turns out it was a fastball, but it definitely wasn't in the strike zone. And Takayama looked a bit foolish swinging at it. But on two strikes, I think it might have been a full count, he hit one to left field, kind of a grounder between short and third. So first career at bat, first career hit, good on him. And then the very next batter was another rookie named Shintaro Yokota. And he hit a pitcher, he hit a grounder to pitcher. And it looked like it could be an easy double play, but because he's a young guy and a speedy guy, he actually ended up breaking up the double play, was on first base, stole second base, and then another newcomer, Matt Haig, up at the plate, brought him home with an RBI to left field. It was pretty exciting to see that opening for the Tigers, you know, two rookies doing something good, and then the new American that everybody seemed worried about also coming through. That was pretty much, though, almost all the fireworks for the Tigers. And unfortunately for Randy, it just seemed to get worse and worse as every inning went by. A hit and a walk in the second, a hit and a walk in the third, as well as an error. So the bases were loaded in the third, two hits in the fourth, a walk and two hits, including an RBI in the fifth, and then another walk and two hits and an error in the sixth, which was another a run scoring hit for the Dragons. And so it really was not pretty for Randy through six innings. And he actually went in the seventh and allowed another run. So he was down 4-2 after his time was done, after 6 2/3 of an inning. Now, the only other cool thing that happened for the Tigers was in the fifth inning when Messenger actually broke up another double play, a potential double play. It looked like a double play ball. He grounded to third, and he legged it out, and he made it to first, so it was not a double play. And Nishioka ended up scoring from third on that play, and it was really cool because the ball never left the infield, but he still managed to score on it, even though the grounder was right to the third baseman, so that was neat. And then when the next batter came up, Randy Messenger stole second base. They weren't expecting it, so the catcher threw the ball to center field because nobody was there to cover the base, and Randy ended up getting to third. It was just great to see him use his legs because last year he was often accused of kind of dogging it on the base paths and stuff like that. So that was cool to see, but unfortunately for the Tigers, they ended up giving up another run in the eighth, and they lost the game 5-2. So Joe, any impressions of the game? Because you saw at least half of it, and then Patrick will ask you a little bit as well, just from what you saw in the highlights. Joe, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think first off, let's take a second to talk about Randy, man. He looks slim and trim. Let's definitely acknowledge that he did some working out this off season. So yeah. He's definitely looking like he can definitely leg out some more, I guess, on the bases. But, you know, it was good seeing him run around a little bit. And then when he, you know, in that fifth inning at bat, when he, you know, put up the bunt and then pulled it back and you know, got a grounder to third, everybody was kind of shocked with that. So I think that helped him kind of mess up their defense there on that play.
For sure. Props to Randy on that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think he did kind of lose control, but it's, you know, it's early on and, you know, getting the jitters out. So I'm not going to hold it on him too hard. But the other thing I did catch is that, you know, we gave them a single run in the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth innings. And that's kind of tough for the morale of the team to go out there every inning and give up a run. But, you know, obviously, you know, looks like we kind of came back a little bit. So,
yeah, you know, the first game also resulted in two errors. I was kind of shaking my head at this. I think it was the second error call. They called an error on Matt Haig, and maybe I'm a bit of a Haig booster, a little bit too much, but it was a sharp hit ball, man. And
I completely agree with you. I put that in my notes too, that shouldn't have been an error. It came off the corner of his glove, but it was right at him.
Yeah.
And it went probably 20 feet in the air after it hit him. So that was a real tough grab if he would have ever had that. So
yeah. And the problem is, for people that didn't actually watch the game and they just read stuff in the press or whatever, I mean, it says, oh, Haig got his first RBI, but he also committed his first error. And one of the things that concerned media and fans and maybe even the club about Haig was his defense. And so on paper, it looks really bad, but actually he didn't make a bad play at all. And then I think the second error, the first error was to Takayama, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, he dropped it in the outfield, I think.
Yeah, he dropped in the outfield. And just a note on that one, I don't want to fully blame Toritani, but Toritani was running back from short, you know, and he really ran back quite a bit and probably was still within Takayama's field of vision as the ball was coming down. And he still should have had it, but I really think that Toritani could have stood to have laid off a little bit earlier. Did you catch that?
Yeah, I did. I think, you know, it was an error, but it wasn't a gross error. So, you know, chalk it up to that and move on.
Well, and yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, Randy ended up covering his butt on that one because they didn't score a run in that inning. Patrick, any impressions just from the highlights that you saw?
Yeah, I think Messenger looks like a bit of a mess from the stretch. I think with runners on base, it looks like he lost control of all of his stuff. So that's the first thing. And the other thing is I was really impressed by Haig's ability to stay back on breaking pitches early in the season before he's seen all the pitchers. I know he had a little bit of a rough spring, but it seems like when a foreigner comes over and has a great spring, and they always struggle in their first year. So those are the two thoughts from what I've seen so far.
You know, really astute observations, though, actually, because if you look at where Randy ended up giving up a lot of his walks were with guys already on base. So perhaps you're right that, you know, from the stretch, he was not his best when it came to control. And then, yeah, with Haig, I mean, he really took a lot of pitches, and I just thought it was impressive to see him do that. And especially in the light of our other foreigner who seems to really enjoy going after a lot of pitches, it's good to see a foreigner that's going to take some, even though they're taking a lot of outside corner strikes because maybe it's something they're not familiar with or comfortable with or used to from the American game, for sure. All right, let's move past that first unfortunate loss. Just one more note on that. I would say that despite the fact they lost the game, as I was watching, I mean, I haven't been that excited to watch the Tigers in a while. Last year, they really did not get, I didn't really get that enthused as I was watching them, but it just seemed like they were playing an exciting brand of ball despite the fact that they lost and committed a couple errors. All right, let's move on to game two. So we've got Atsushi Nomi on the mound, and they've got Yamai on the mound, Daisuke Yamai, their veteran. So once again, Haig came through with a couple doubles early in the game, and actually the third inning, Takayama and he hit back-to-back RBI doubles, which was really exciting to see, and it gave Nomi a two-run lead. And then in the bottom of the fifth, the long-awaited first home run of the season for the Tigers, as well as the first home run / first hit of the season for Gomez, was a monster shot, a big blast to the left field stands. That was really exciting to watch. And it was really cool to see that after the home run, they actually laced three straight singles after that, scoring another run. So they weren't satisfied to just score the three runs in the inning. They actually continued to be aggressive at the plate. and hit the ball really well. So after five innings, Nomi had a 6-0 lead. And unfortunately, he gave up a couple runs in the top of the sixth, including a home run to, I forget his first name. Is it Damon Viciedo?
That's Diane. Dayan.
Okay. Dayan Viciedo. Anyways, a Cuban new import for the Chunichi Dragons, hitting a home run for the second time in two games. I think they scored another run on an error. In any case, the score was still 6-2, and actually the Tigers got one back in the bottom of the inning, making it 7-2. There were runners on first and third, and Haig hit a sacrifice fly. So they scored a seventh run, and then in the seventh inning, I think the Tigers allowed another run. This one going against reliever Takamiya. But that was it for the scoring, so it ended up a 7-3 win. We got to see Fukuhara and Mateo make their debuts in this one as well. So it was just a solid game for the Tigers from start to finish. I think, Joe, you'd mentioned that you watched most of that game.
Yep, that was a good one. Definitely good to see Haig coming in with two doubles there. He's definitely showing some consistency off the start, which is huge. Uh-huh. Definitely the fifth inning there where we had runners on first and third and two outs and Gomez comes up to the plate. And, after watching last season, everybody's like, okay, here comes another strikeout. And mm-hmm. he finally got it to go. So it was, good to see that, good relief to see, the runs on the board, three RBIs there. And so that, I think that put the team in a grind there and kept on moving, with three more hits after that. So it was really good to see him kind of have, faith in themselves that they can actually do, put runs on the board in a good, consistent basis. So definitely the hitting was on, which is, I think what was lacking a lot of last year, 11 hits in a game, mm-hmm. that should be normal, to see that sure. many hits, not, compared to the last couple seasons, actually. Mm-hmm. So definitely a good game. And Nomi, just had it going on. He's being Nomi, so.
Yeah, Nomi had a couple of good stretches last season where he showed this great consistency and just the solid performance, maybe not dominant, but certainly just getting guys out when he needed to, getting the strikeout when he needed it and so on, and actually showing pretty good control, which is something he did quite well on Saturday. Patrick, did you catch the game or highlights, or did you get any impressions on that game?
Yeah, I've seen the highlights, and I watched the first part of the game. I was only able to get through a little bit yesterday, but yeah, I think I agree with what Joe said. It was nice to see Hanshin string together a lot of hits and a lot of base runners, and I think that was really their weakness last year. And if they could have done that more often, they probably would have won the league last year. Mm-hmm. So just being able to string together a lot of hits, and Haig continues to impress with his gap power, and it's nice to see the two young players at the top of the lineup, Yokota and Takayama, really just kind of jumping into the starting lineup as rookies in their first year and embrace that role. And even Mateo as a closer as well, not screwing it up, that's the best you can do. So, good game, and nice to see Kanemoto get his first win in the second game of the year.
Yeah, for sure. He said he wasn't even thinking about it at the end of the game. And I don't know, that might have been a bit of an embellishment or a little white lie on his part. Interestingly, it was the fifth inning that brought about the first hit of the season for the three guys who didn't get hits in the last game, in game one, that being Yokota, Gomez, and Toritani. They all had their first hits of the year in that fifth inning. And catcher Taichi Okazaki, I don't want to overlook him and his importance to the team this season so far and how much he's impressed. He also recorded the first RBI of his career in that same inning. So props to him. He's off to a great start as well. And I'll agree with you on what you said about Haig, being able to hit the gaps and just being able to find his groove early. It's really great to see that. I don't know if either of you guys caught the Hero interview after the game, but I just want to talk about that a little bit.
I read about it. I didn't watch it.
I'm going to guess, Joe, that you saw it.
Yeah, it was definitely a little awkward, I would say.
For sure. Well, so the co-heroes of the game were Shun Takayama and Matt Haig. So Takayama, rookie, and Haig, a first-timer in Japan. Neither of them really knows what's going on. And apparently the complaints about Takayama were that he was speaking too quietly. It was hard to hear his voice. And oh, that's fine, you know, whatever. But with Haig, I really thought it was interesting. At the end of the interview, the interviewer said, hey, you know, so you've been in Japan for a while. Give us a few words in Japanese. And he said he wanted to say "ganbatte." Which is still kind of grammatically wrong, but at least it's a good try. But he actually pronounced it wrong, so he said "gombatte," and the interviewer didn't know what was going on, and his interpreter looked a little bit confused as well. You know, me being a foreigner, and perhaps you guys, if you heard it, you might have kind of caught it, because I know when I heard other foreigners speak, even if it was poor Japanese, I understood them. Well, I felt kind of bad for him in a way, even though he took it fairly well. And I was thinking, you know, my first time speaking Japanese at an enkai, at a party. I remember standing up and having to give an English speech, and even that was hard enough for me because I was like, we just don't give speeches in Canada, you know, in our society. And then at the end of the speech, they said, now say something in Japanese. And I froze. And I mean, I was in front of like maybe 20 people or 30 people, but you know, Haig did it in front of 30,000 people. And I just can't imagine, I don't know if he felt pressure or not, but I mean, it's just kind of an awkward situation. And so I really felt for the guy, and hats off for him for trying. And he tried again tonight, apparently, or today. And we'll get to that in just a little bit.
Yeah, I'd just say that, you know, it didn't look like he had ever seen the Hero interview at all, because, you know, after he was like trying to like, you know, he was looking over to Takayama to see like when he was bowing with his hat off, and he just looked really out of sorts. And you would wish that, you know, they would give him, you know, at least show him a video of one, at least know what's going on. Hey, you know, you're going to go talk the interview, and then you're going to go, you know, greet the fans and stuff like that after it. He just looked so out of place, but. You know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. I'm not going to disagree with you. Certainly. Yeah, it was quite awkward. And, but at the same time, I mean, that's a moment that he's going to remember forever. And, interestingly enough, spoiler alert, but Matt Haig made it up to the Heroes podium again today. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. But game three today had Kyuji Fujikawa, who you mentioned earlier, Joe, making his return to the mound. For the Hanshin Tigers, he was the starter today, and he was going up against, I'm so bad with first names, Naylor of the Dragons. I forget his first name. I want to say
it's
Duncan.
Drew.
It's Drew. Yeah, you're right. It's with a D. Okay, Drew. And Naylor just, he was getting nailed right from the start. I mean, his pitch count was, I want to say it was around 75 after three innings. And the Tigers just tore him apart. Yokota got hit by a pitch, and then Fukudome brought him home two batters later. In the second inning, Umeno led off with a single. Takayama brought him home with a triple down the right field line. That was followed by Yokota's chopper to left that brought Takayama home. And then in the third, Fukudome led it off with a first pitch home run. And so before the game was even like, you know, it was less than half over, it's already 4-0 Tigers. And Fujinami was looking pretty good in those first three innings as well. He only allowed one hit, and he hit a batter. He actually hit Vicieto, which is kind of interesting because he's the guy that hit home runs the past two days. And Vicieto made him pay for it, because in the top of the fourth, he hit another home run. So three games, three home runs for Vicieto. The guy is looking good. He actually went 3-for-4 today. He got an RBI, his very next at-bat. Actually, I think it was two RBIs in his next at-bat. Yeah. So he finished the day with three RBI on three hits. And by the end of the fifth inning, it was a tie 4-4. And Fujikawa just looked like he was starting to lose a bit of his control. He was looking a little bit fatigued. It looked like, I don't know if they knew what was coming or what, but he was just very hittable in those two innings. And he came down off the mound after five innings and 88 pitches of action. Fortunately for him, the bullpen came through, and that's something that the bullpen didn't do too often last season. So the combination of Enokida, Sayuchi, Takahashi, Fukuhara, and Mateo shut down the Dragons for the last four innings. They did a decent job. I think they only allowed three hits and two walks. So five base runners in four innings is not too bad. And the Tigers, for their part, after the game was tied 4-4, in the sixth inning, Who else but Matt Haig came through with the winning hit, and this was an interesting one, I thought, because until this point, all of his hits, I think, on the season were all pulled to left field. This is the first one that he actually hit to the opposite field, and he did it with intention. He knew that the gap was there between first and second, and he found it, you know, with ease, and he brought home what ended up being the game-winning run. So that was it, 5-4. Mateo records his first save as in NPB, and actually for the second straight game, he goes one inning and strikes out two guys without allowing a base runner. So as one of you mentioned earlier, he's looking impressive early on. Any impressions on the game, guys? Joe?
Yeah, I would some things here in my notes that Takayama in his RBI in the second, that was after, I think he got it on his 11th pitch. He finally got that.
You're right.
Big hit to third, or to the back of first base in the corner there. So it was a, you know, really kind of toughing it out. As a rookie, I think that's tough to do. It's easy to get down on yourself, you know, but, you know, toughing through 11 pitches there, that's huge.
Yeah, absolutely. So, totally agree with you.
Mm-hmm. And then I think Fukudome's home run is a big, you know, big positive there. I think he's, you know, one that we've kind of maybe questioned a little bit of, you know, is he going to be able to perform? And so getting him a home run early in the season might give him a little bit of morale boost and definitely help bring out some more hits out of him. So I think QG, you know, had a rough outing. You know, given that he was a closer, it's probably very different to come back into MPB as a starter. I know he did some in an industrial league last year, I believe. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that – I think he had maybe one complete game there. But I don't see that he was, you know, kind of the person with stamina to go to a whole game too often. So I don't know if we'll see that this year. But definitely, you know, the first three innings looked good and then he kind of trailed off. So hopefully maybe we'll get four good innings next time and keep building him up.
Sure. So. Yeah, I think actually management has kind of expected six solid innings out of him per outing. I don't think they're expecting him to necessarily go the distance either. I'm not so sure if it was his problem. It might have been fatigue, but also maybe Patrick, you might have some insight into this as well. But they switched catchers for today's game, and so Umeno was the catcher. And from everything that I've heard from Hanshin Tigers fans, and maybe a little bit even from the press, is that Umeno is not a good game caller as a catcher. I mean, he's got a decent bat, but he still needs to work on that aspect of the game. I wonder if that played into how QG performed on the mound. Any thoughts, Patrick?
Well, I don't know. I don't know much about that aspect of Umeno's game, actually. But I'll say with QG, he's a guy who really had really one pitch as a closer. Mm-hmm. Which was his fastball, and he had that splitter to sort of give a change of pace, and occasionally you'd see a curveball. Mm-hmm. But really, he was a one-pitch guy, so I don't know how much game calling there's really going to be with a guy like that, other than where you want to throw it to each batter. And even then, as a closer, QG's control wasn't that great. It was just throw it higher, throw it low. Mm-hmm. And he really relied on getting a lot of vertical movement from his fastball back then,
right?
As a closer, and he just didn't have that in today's game or yesterday's game, the third game of the season. So he had a fastball that was a lot more modest, a lot less vertical movement, a lot more straight. And in the video I've seen, I didn't see any breaking pitches at all. So was he throwing any, or what else did he have?
Yeah, he was actually. In the first three innings, the first two innings, he relied mostly on his fastball, which, by the way, obviously the velocity has come down on. I think they said that the fastest it reached was 144 kilometers, which is about 90 miles, and it averaged about 139, which is, what, about 87?
Yeah, I mean, that's way down from his peak, but his peak is, what, 9-10 years ago?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, he was averaging 154, 155 when he was really dominant. So.
Right.
Yeah, I was hoping he can at least sneak it back up to 150 or so, and maybe he will. But he's going to have to learn how to get by without that blazing, you know, very kind of wildly moving vertical fastball, which was really unusual. So it was a very unusual skill. I don't think I've ever seen another pitcher quite like that. So he's just going to have to get by with more pedestrian stuff, and I think this is probably reality for QG at this point.
Sure, you know, I, as a fan, as a young fan or someone who hasn't been a fan of the team for a while, I never actually got to see Fujikawa pitch in his prime. But I hear a lot of stories. I read a lot of stuff. One of the things I read is that he generated it's like 1.5 times as much spin on his fastball as other hurlers. And so that obviously came into play. Obviously, there's a lot more movement on it. It is interesting. It'll be interesting to see how he copes with that. I know certainly, I watched last Sunday's exhibition game that he pitched in, and he looked a lot better in that one. He's definitely pitching to contact a lot more, which, you know, obviously when you lose a bit of your velocity and your ability to strike guys out, you're going to have to do that. For the record, he got 3 strikeouts today in 5 innings. So quite a bit below his average from his heyday. He did throw a variety of pitches, though, especially from the third inning onward. I mean, it looks like he does have a couple of breaking pitches. He's got his changeup that he's starting to work on a little bit more as well. So we'll see how he does with his pitch choices, and also we'll see how the catchers do with him as well. It'll be interesting to see if they bring Okazaki in for him next Sunday or not.
Yeah, I think he could use a little bit of a veteran guy. Sorry to jump in, but
no worries.
Yeah, I'm found some other videos, and I see a shooto two-seamer, and I see some kind of a changeup. So I think working with a veteran catcher, I think, would make a big difference for a guy like that. Mm-hmm. I hope he gets better this year.
Yeah, me too. I think maybe one of the thoughts that they had was that maybe Fujikawa could kind of help raise Umeno's game up and, you know, kind of coach him through the process of leading a pitcher through a game. I don't know if that is the way they're thinking, but it kind of seemed like maybe that was the way they were thinking. But I guess that remains to be seen as the season progresses.
If that's the idea, I would hope they go with a guy like Nomi. But that's just me.
Yeah, maybe it's the fact that QG is a little bit more vocal. Maybe he would be a little bit more willing to kind of not scold him, but certainly, you know, point out his mistakes or shortcomings a little bit more than Nomi. I don't know. That's just my impression. I feel like Nomi's a little bit more of a calm, laid back guy that may not necessarily, you know, lay it all out, but I could be wrong.
It makes sense to me. On the other hand, he's a guy who knows how to get by with the stuff that he has. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Nomi goes to the mound with a plan for each pitcher, each batter. And can get by with a weak fastball and good breaking stuff and good control. So, you know, there's a lot to be learned from that from a young player.
Absolutely. You know, for sure. It's really interesting to see how these veteran pitchers deal with kind of a decline in their, I don't want to say in their skills, but certainly in the velocity of their pitches or, you know, the amount of movement they get on their pitches or whatever. Guys like Nomi and certainly QG are guys that are going to have to adapt their game to not be so much power pitchers or guys that get a lot of strikeouts, but rather that they're able to just, you know, pitch to contact. So we'll see what happens as the season goes on. All right. So just to recap, the Tigers went 2-1 in this series. As for the rest of the standings, we got the Giants who swept the Swallows. And so the Giants are in first, the Swallows are in last. And then the Carp won 2 out of 3 against DeNA. So they're, I guess, in a tie for second with the Tigers. And then DeNA and Chunichi are below them. So that is the weekend that was. Any other impressions of the players, of the style of play, anything like that, guys?
Yeah, I'd definitely say that the two leadoff, Takayama and Yokota, definitely had a good start, a good solid start. Each of them had 4 hits during the 3 games, so I think it was definitely good to see them getting on base and actually letting Haig and Fukudome come through and actually get some RBIs. So it was definitely, you know, a good start to the season, solid. I think there was a lot of questions there with the rookies and how they'd do. And I think, you know, they answered the call there.
You know, I'm going to agree with you in a sense, and I'm going to also, in a way, disagree with you. I'm actually more impressed with Takayama than I am with Yokota. And I'll tell you why, and you can feel free to disagree or point out the error of my thinking. Yokota is one of the guys that Kanemoto named as a potential power hitter for the team in the future. He's still 20 years old, but he has got like a pretty big body. I mean, he's the kind of guy that is able to hit the long ball, and yet he has actually not hit anything out of the infield in that all of his hits were grounders that found holes or one of them was a chopper that went over the third baseman, but he's still actually, I don't think he's even pulled a single ball yet either. So it just seems like he hasn't found his groove, even though he did get four hits and even though he stole a base and he's, you know, he's showing that kind of that young man's power and just what a young man can do to invigorate a team. I don't know if he's got it just yet. And I wouldn't say bench him, but I'm not necessarily sure if this 1-2 punch is going to work for an extended stretch of time.
So I'm going to actually jump in and provide a counterpoint there. There's two things. One is that power is usually the last skill that players develop in any league, in Japan, in America, anywhere. I think look at a guy like Hirata from Chunichi, and he just broke through with his power last year at age 27 or 28. And so I'm trying to think of a good Hanshin comparison. But driving the ball and specifically choosing pitches that you can drive rather than choosing pitches you can make contact with is very difficult. And Tsutsugo for the Bay Stars is another good case. Mm-hmm. So a guy like this is going to need some time, and three games is a little early. The fact that he's just making contact with the ball, I think, is encouraging. The second thing is I'm going to give Kanemoto some credit for having a guy batting second who can actually hit. And not a guy who's just going to bunt, which is a really modern idea in Japan. So
absolutely.
So I'll just give him a little bit of credit for that. So I liked what I saw so far. So I hope he continues to improve.
Sure. Just to soften what I said earlier a little bit, it has been nice too to see Yokota actually make contact with pitches that were out of the zone, not necessarily making contact and putting the ball in play, but just making contact and staying alive in the at bat. And that's something that I wasn't necessarily expecting from him, but it seems like he does have pretty decent bat control. Obviously, to be able to find those holes in the infield, you do need a certain amount of bat control or a whole lot of luck. And I would like to say it's more of the former than the latter, or I hope so. I'm certainly not saying, you know, Yokota is not worthy of being the starting lineup, but let's see what happens. I mean, it's a long season, and one of my concerns definitely about that 1-2 punch is, you know, neither of these guys has ever played a full season. And so I anticipate that one or both of them will experience fatigue down the road, and they may not be able to keep up this pace. Maybe once summer rolls along, maybe they need to be dropped in the order, but we'll see what happens. Obviously, it depends on how they do and how they perform. Anyone else that caught your eye, either for better or for worse, guys?
So one guy I did not see this weekend was Hojo, the infielder, and I didn't get a chance to read up on what's going on with him. Did he make the Ichigun team to start the season, or is he down with the farm club?
Yeah, he made Ichigun, and he came in and pinch hit today. That was his lone appearance on the weekend, and he grounded out to third. So he's had one at bat per year so far. Like, he only got one last year. The Tigers also have to drop three guys, I think two or three, down to the farm to make room for the three starters for next week's early series. And he is potentially a candidate simply because there's no real room for him anywhere in the lineup.
So he's a guy I have my eye on as a guy who can spell Toritani or Nishioka, one of those two guys.
Yes.
Winds up getting hurt. And I think that's a pretty high probability that one of those guys will miss time this year.
So, I'm betting on Nishioka.
Well, with good reason, I would say. Yeah. But Toritani's knees are in bad shape too. So, you know, there's another guy. He could probably use rest more than the 22-year-olds. I mean,
sure.
You know, Toritani is a little younger than me. I can tell you that I had a lot more energy when I was 22 and 23 than I do now. So, a guy like that is important for the team's depth this year, I think.
No doubt, but... Yeah, unfortunately, Toritani, I think, is just very insistent on getting that consecutive inning streak up and, I don't know, to break some kind of record or whatever. So it's not even just a game streak for him. I think it's the full innings, just the way that Aniki did back in the day. So I think it's going to take a lot for him to be pulled from the lineup, or it may take just a gutsy move by Kanemoto, which actually I'm kind of hoping for. I really just hope that I'm actually with you on that, Patrick. I hope they keep Hojo up on the team, and I hope that they actually spell Toritani maybe in late innings of games and give Hojo, you know, three innings of work or whatever. Just give him a little bit more time, maybe even a start at second base every now and then to spell Nishioka or whatever as well.
Yeah, so yeah, good opening series though. I'm happy that baseball's back.
Yeah, indeed, me too. How about you, Joe? Any other comments about any of the players, their performance, or anything like that?
No, I think speaking about Kanemoto, I mean, it's it was great to see him, you know, be selected as the manager, especially because, you know, he's my favorite player. But, you know, I think he's, you know, done well. You know, there hasn't been any, you know, WADA disasters, you know, yet on his call. So, you know, I don't know if I'm calling him something else, but, you know, he did good for his, you know, his first three games. Funny note, though, is in when Mateo had the game ball for the first win. And if you noticed, they were going towards a dugout and one of the players had faked to throw a ball up into the stands. And they were, I think, joking with Kanemoto that they had tossed the game ball up to the crowd. But that was kind of funny to see them playing jokes. But, you know, I definitely think, you know, I think he's, you know, ready for a year of dip something different, you know, from the Tigers having, you know, just rough last couple years. You know, the Cho Henkaku, I think, is what the slogan is this year.
Yeah.
And that means like great change or, you know, something to that effect. So I really think he's come in with a different attitude than a manager's had before. So hopefully that, you know, leads to a different result.
Yeah, I definitely hope the same thing. I would love to see that. And I like the fact that he's not afraid to call a spade as well. I mean, he's done it even in the post-game interviews. And when they asked him about Yokota's first hit of the season, he said, oh, by the way, it was an infield single. He said, yeah, you know, I think that was actually an error on the part of the shortstop. And I think he was half joking, but half serious. And so it's kind of fun to see him, being very frank in the interviews after games. So I wish him all the best this season and I'm glad to see him there. I think, like I said in the opener of the show, it's a lot more exciting to watch these 2016 Tigers than it was to watch the 2015 Tigers. And that's after only three games. By the way, do you guys have predictions or any thoughts about where the Tigers might finish in the standings this season? I think, Patrick, you already might have done. Did you do the Central League show with JBW?
Yeah, I did.
And where did you put the Tigers?
I had them second. I had them second after Yomiuri, as much as, you know, as a fan, that pains me. But what I did was when I was doing the predictions, I typed up all the teams in a file and, mm-hmm. And just looked at the order that I had them in and I couldn't think of anything better. So I went with that. And, so I had them second. So we'll see how it goes. I think, there's probably five teams that could win the league this year. So it'll be a really interesting year for the Central League.
For sure. Well, that's almost the way it was last year too, where, I mean, there were really four teams, from August and beyond that we're still in the running for first place. So I don't see things being that different this year myself. How about you, Joe? Have you got any thoughts about where the Tigers might finish this year?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I really don't follow much of the other teams and kind of see where they are. But, you know, it's always tough going against the Giants. So, you know, if everybody says they still got what they had last year, you know, they think they picked up some other guys and they've had some good batting I saw so far this year. So, you know, it looks like another tough season. So I say we're, you know, we have a chance to be at the top, you know, looking at where we are. Hopefully we don't get too injured or at least have some younger guys that are able to fill in. So I think, you know, a 1-2 is possible. You know, a 1 would be great, but, mm-hmm. you know, realistically, I don't know.
So. Right. Just for your guys' sake and maybe for listeners, if you didn't catch my post where I made my predictions, I totally went with my heart on part of the predictions, or at least the part with the Hanshin Tigers finishing first. If I really were to sit down and examine the evidence a little bit more closely, I probably would not have put them in first, but I'm still going to stick with that. I went Tigers, Giants. I picked DeNA in third just as my surprise pick, Yakult in fourth, Hiroshima in fifth, and Chunichi in last. So let's see what happens as the season goes on. You never know with the Central.
Yeah, that's the exact same order I had them in, except I had Yomiuri first and Hanshin second.
Interesting. And probably if I had done things right, or I don't want to say right, but if I'd really thought it through, I probably would have come up with Yomiuri in first and the Tigers in second. I really do think the Tigers are going to finish in the A class this year. And I don't know if DeNA has what it takes to take one of those top two spots, but I really like what I see out of just the core that they've got. And I think that Rami is going to breathe some life into that organization. But guys, for the second half of the show, I actually want to talk a little bit about the Yomiuri Giants now. And that's something that Patrick and I had kind of agreed to dialogue about together a few weeks ago when I couldn't find an actual fan of the team to or a follower, close follower of the team to talk about their last season, their off season, and the upcoming season. So let's talk about that all together, if you guys don't mind. And Joe, if you don't really have a lot to say, that's fine. But definitely, we want to hear your input as well. So, how closely would you say that you follow the Giants, Patrick? Because I mean, you're obviously not just a Hanshin fan or whatever, but you're also probably not a Giants fan either.
No, I'm definitely not a Giants fan. Although I don't hate them a lot the way a lot of the Hanshin fans hate the Giants. Uh-huh. So I suppose there's that. I suppose that's as good as you're going to get. I don't think anyone really wants to admit to being a Giants fan. I think one of the things about writing and sort of how my following of Japanese baseball has changed is it's kind of sort of ruined the fandom a little bit. And okay. So I'm a lot more neutral as a fan than I used to be, before I started the blog in 2008, I was really a big Hanshin fan and that was my team, but, now it's kind of more about appreciating each player on the teams, whether they're good, no matter which team it is, if the player is good, it's kind of, just more about appreciating the player's skills rather than cheering for one team to win. So it's really changed quite a bit.
So you call it like it is, and then really then you would honestly not have any hatred in your heart for their closer, Sawamura, because I think probably every Tigers fan absolutely loathes that guy. But you're pretty neutral on him too?
No, I don't hate him.
He's definitely a very talented pitcher, but he's just one of those guys that I think, especially the Tigers fans, every time they see his face up on the TV, they want to punch their TV screens, or certainly they'd love to do the same to him in person.
I think he inspires a lot of that with just sort of his, and I guess sort of all of the guys that that refuse to play for any team except the Giants, like Sugano and Chono, that's a little distasteful, I think. But I don't hate him.
Right. I think too, like I've seen it a couple times now where even if he beans a guy, I think he does not necessarily follow the Japanese custom, I guess, of tipping the hat and kind of expressing, somewhat a little bit of remorse or just concern if the guy's okay. And
or to last show season that it was an accident, so. Yeah, I mean,
right.
You should follow that rule. I mean, that's, I actually think that's a good sporting rule. And
sure,
it's sort of un-American in a way. We're uncompetitive, but it's a game, and it's meant to be fair and sporting. So, that is a valid point against him.
Sure. And last season, actually, he threw a pitch that hit our pinch hitter Keisuke Kano in the, I think it was the pinky, and broke his finger, and that put him out of action for a month. And I was at that game, and I've never seen the fans that angry. So, yeah.
It's the pinky. Yeah. If he was throwing at his head, that's a different story.
Well, if it was Aniki too, there's no way he would have missed a month. He wouldn't have missed an inning. But I guess to each his own or whatever. So getting back to the Giants as a whole, last season they finished in second, as most of our listeners know, and they ended up beating our Tigers in the opening round of the Climax Series, 2-1. It was actually a hard fought series. I was actually pleasantly surprised at how the Tigers did, because I thought they were going to get swept pretty easily. But did you think the second place was about where they should have finished last year, Patrick?
Yeah, that's a good question. Their offense was pretty lifeless through most of the season. I think they really got by on their pitching, specifically Fujinami Sugano. I have Hanshin on the brain. I guess it's still early in the morning here. Sugano and Michaelis, and even Pareto was good, and Taguchi was good, and there's the
Takagi was good for a while too.
Takagi was good. Yeah, so they had some good depth, and one thing that was unusual about them is that they were getting good starts all the way through their rotation. And a team like Yakult, for example, or even Hanshin, would just have some games where they just have to start these pitchers that just aren't that good. Mm-hmm. And so the Yomiuri had a long list of competitive guys and a pretty good bullpen too. So I think second was about to where they played. I think in terms of skill, I think they were behind Hiroshima. I think Hiroshima had the most talented roster last year. Season.
They were certainly the biggest disappointments, I would say.
Yeah, they were a disappointment. And so their roster was probably somewhere around second in terms of talent as well. So it was probably about right. I think Colt really surprised me, at least, and really outplayed mm-hmm. expectations, I think, for most people. I think Hiroshima really underplayed expectations, and Yomiuri was probably about right, although I would have expected a little more offense out of that group.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was something that I didn't think would happen, would continue all season. I mean, at the midway point when I started to pay attention to other teams' statistics and how they were doing, I was pretty surprised to see how low the Giants were as far as their ranking in batting average and other things. And then as it continued through the whole year, I was just shocked. There are certainly guys that had down seasons, and I kind of expect them to do a little bit better with the bats this year, particularly in light of the fact that they picked up a couple of imports, both of whom have decent bats. They got Garrett Jones from the majors, and then they picked up Luis Cruz from the Chiba Lotte Marines, correct? Mm-hmm. So I expect those two guys to definitely shore up their offense. And even the Japanese guys that underperformed last season, I wouldn't be surprised to see them have good seasons this year. Anyone that you think is going to stand out in 2016, Patrick?
Yeah, I think you're right on the money. I think that I really like the addition of Jones. Yomiuri is kind of hit or miss with their foreign player selections. They're new imports that they get directly from North America.
They were all missed last season, weren't they?
Well, Michaelis and Pareda were new newcomers, and they both did really well. So
yeah, with the bats though, they had I don't even remember the names of the guys, but I don't think anybody stuck from start to finish.
They had some Cuban players. They had I don't know if Cepeda had his first year last year or 2 years ago, but he mm-hmm. was a guy who didn't do anything. Leslie Anderson was pretty good in 2014 and pretty non-existent last year. Mm-hmm. So those are the two guys I remember.
They brought in somebody that they had high hopes for, and then he dropped that infield fly that gave Hiroshima the win at one point. I don't know if you remember that game.
Yeah, I do.
I forget
remember
his name,
that, but his name is escaping me too. They always do this thing where they bring in some guy in the middle of the year, and of course expectations are too high and it never works. So right. We'll see if they do that this year. But Jones has legitimate power, and he could hit 20 to 25 home runs in the major leagues if he got the at-bats, and I'm sure mm-hmm. he could do it in Japan too. He could probably hit 30 to 35 in Japan. He's going to strike out a lot. So, you know, if new manager Takahashi can stomach that and give him the patience to have the at-bats, I think he'll provide some power for sure. Cruz is not going to give you a ton of offense, but he'll give you, mm-hmm. relative to most second basemen, he'll give you a ton. He'll give you some pop, and, you know, he won't hit for high average, but he'll get on base probably at an above average rate, and he'll give you 15 to 20 home runs, which is a big deal, considering the guys they had out there last year with Ibata and Kataoka, who just, you know, you knock the bat out of their hands. So... The guy that I'm looking for to have a better year is Sakamoto, the shortstop.
Uh-huh.
I really think he's a good player. You know, I think he didn't play up to his own standards last year in terms of the numbers he put up. He's I think 27 this year, and he's in his physical prime, and I think he should play quite well. So, well, I hope he does, because I think he's quite talented.
I'll agree with you on everything except the hope that he does. But you know, he definitely is talented. He definitely is young. He didn't reach his potential last year, and he's the kind of guy that should easily be able to take the what do they call it? He should be in the best nine in the Central League. It shouldn't have been Toritani, but Sakamoto just didn't have a great year. He's definitely. I think he's one of the keys to their success this coming year. But also, I would look at Shinosuke Abe, who I think they're putting back in the catcher's position for this year full time.
So that was the plan. I'm sorry to jump in, but
go ahead.
The plan with Jones taking over first base, and They have Seiji Kobayashi, who's a really a glove-first catcher with a great throwing arm. Mm-hmm. Abe, you know, Abe's on the downside of his career without a doubt, but he would still be the best hitting catcher, but he didn't play at all this opening series. So I don't really know what's going on with him.
I heard actually that he started the year at Nigun.
Huh.
And I'm not sure why, but, he was down there, and then there was somebody else that was kind of key that was down in Nigun for the Giants, and the name escapes me. You know, I really should have looked it up before this Giants preview, and I apologize to our listeners for that. But, definitely the Giants have a lot of pieces to the puzzle to be able to put together a championship season. And I listened to a Japanese podcast that did a Giants preview, and the guy that they had on, I mean, obviously he was a Giants fan, but he said really the pennant should not be a problem for them to win. I think maybe another key that we haven't talked about, Patrick and Joe, is new manager Yoshinobu Takahashi and how he does taking over from Hara. Any thoughts one way or the other on that?
So I quite like the move, actually. I think Hara did the right thing stepping aside. I think he was burnt out and ready to move on. I think that's a real grind managing that team for mm-hmm. as long as he did. So I think that some new blood could benefit them. And Takahashi is really a Giants guy through and through.
Yes.
You know, and he's relatively young as a manager. He's 40. He could have continued playing as a playing manager, but he took the mature thing and decided to retire as a player and focus on managing the team, which was absolutely the right move to make. And, I think he's a smart guy. I think the challenge for him will be seeing how he manages the bullpen and some of the finer points of the game over the course of the season. But he's been sitting on the bench, and I think he was a part-time coach for the last couple of years, in addition to his playing duties. So I think it's a good move from them. I certainly can't think of a better candidate to manage that team, unless they were going to, hire some experienced guy, Joe Girardi or Don Mattingly or someone like that, somebody who can live with the pressure of that type of team.
Right, but I believe that I don't think the Giants have ever gone outside of their organization for a manager, right? So I don't. There's no reason for them to start now either.
And of the Giants guys, so to speak, dyed in the wool Giants guys, I think he's certainly the most obvious candidate. I think it's certainly the best it can be.
Sure. I've said this like five or six times in the show, like, let's see what happens. Right. I mean, obviously the season's young, but, he's off to a great start, 3-0 and, yeah, all the best to him, or all the second best to him. I don't mind if they finish second. I'd love to see the Tigers in first.
Yeah, Honshin wins. That's it'll just make the victory that much sweeter.
You know, I think that's kind of one of those things that Tigers fans almost crave too. I mean, like, it's a little bit less satisfying for the Tigers to win it all if the Giants are a bad team on the year. I mean, it's going to be, like you said, that much more satisfying if we have to beat a healthy and strong Giants team to take the championship.
And, one other thing I'll point out is that despite sort of the intense rivalry, I think there is a lot of mutual respect between the Tigers and the Giants. One story I have is when I was living in Japan in 2002, when Hara quit managing the Giants the first time around, mm-hmm. His last game with the Giants was at Koshien. And, or maybe it was 2003. It must've been 2003. Mm-hmm. And, cause they won in 2002 and Hara was the manager. And so Hara quit after 2003 and the Tigers won the pennant in a dominating year.
Mm-hmm.
And the last game of the season was at Koshien, and he did his farewell speech and they gave him a bouquet, and, the stadium was still full at the end of the game. And, all of the fans in the stands cheered him. And, so even though it's this hated rival, it was still very polite and respectful. So, it's different from, I think, other sports, where there is that kind of mutual respect as a rival and not like hatred, I don't know if that's making sense or not, but,
This is Joe. I think it really does, because, my other sport's hockey, and and rivalries there are just like, you know, brawls all the time on the ice. So, you know, seeing baseball rivalries be a lot more respectful is definitely what I've noticed as well.
Yeah, I was thinking of hockey and like European soccer, football, you know, and just, you know, hooliganism and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, I think it's a little different in between that rivalry particularly.
My understanding, too, is that certainly on the fan end of things, it certainly has calmed down a lot in this generation as compared to maybe in the 70s or earlier. That's not to say that maybe fans didn't respect the Giants at that time or that they didn't respect each other, but maybe this new generation has also kind of brought about a new change in that respect as well. But I do agree with you. I do definitely think that there is a mutual respect between the teams. And there's just the occasional comment in the media, but I think... comments from players, but I think sometimes they do that just to kind of egg each other on and stuff. Like I know Sakamoto said a couple of things last year that kind of irked Tigers fans, and probably we at some point in the past 5 years have said things that have irked Giants fans as well. So
of course, both sides want to win, you know. So it's definitely still a rivalry. It's just not, you know, hatred.
For sure. Interestingly, sorry. On that note, I don't want to like. Take up too much more of you guys' time, I don't want to necessarily boast or anything like that. It's hardly boasting when I've got Patrick on the show anyways and all that he's accomplished or the places that have called him. But I got an email from Vice Sports, and I don't know if either of you have heard of Vice Sports, but I don't know if they're like an online channel or something like that. But anyways, they've asked me just to talk to them a little bit more about this rivalry between the Giants and Tigers and just to give them a little bit more background and stuff like that. And so I'm actually going to be doing this talk early next week, and I'm just really excited to be able to talk to somebody that wants to cover NPB from the American side of things. And so it's going to be a lot of fun. Incidentally, the person that contacted me is the daughter of Detroit Red Wings legend Igor Larionov, and I don't know how closely you guys follow hockey or how far back you guys go, but he was a star in his day, and he's one of the best Russian players to ever play the game, especially on the North American side of things. So I was pretty stoked about that.
Yeah, I heard from her actually as well, so I'm glad that she's following up on the story, and she definitely picked a great guy to talk to. So yeah, it'll be a great experience for you.
Yeah, I sure hope so. I really don't know to what extent I'm going to be involved in the process or anything like that. But even just being a source of information that she can tap into and then create the story that she wants to create, I'm just excited about that as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's great that she contacted you as well, because obviously you've got, you know, a great broad knowledge of all the teams, and certainly you've got a little bit more history as far as following NPB longer than I have.
Yeah, so I told them to go to Koshien, so hopefully you get to see them out there.
That'd be great.
I don't want to give away too much because I don't know what they'll actually do. But yeah, I definitely, every time I get a chance to talk to somebody who has a question like that, I always steer them towards specifically Koshien as a good sort of place to get the big picture on Japanese baseball, just overall with Hanshin Tigers fans and even high school baseball and just baseball in general. I kind of consider it sort of the spiritual home of Japanese baseball.
The Mecca, if you will. Yeah, for sure.
It's a good way to put it.
So
I hope they follow up on the story, and I hope you get to be involved.
Thanks. I appreciate it. And, I'll keep all the listeners up to date on what's going on. If anything kind of exciting, you know, comes about from this next week on the show, I'll share a little bit more about my experience or whatever. But we're going to wrap things up, guys. I think we've been on the air for about an hour or so, and I like to keep it around this length. So thank you, Joe. Thank you, Patrick, for joining me today. It was a real pleasure talking to both of you guys.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Real quick, do you guys have any predictions about the upcoming week for the Tigers? They are going to be playing 3 on the road at Jingu against the Swallows, and then 3 on the road at Yokohama Stadium against the DeNA Bay Stars. Any thoughts about what their record might be this week?
Well, no. I hadn't thought about it at all, actually.
Okay, all right.
I'll go out on a limb and say that they win both of them, 2-1 on each of them.
Okay, all right. I'm going to say, just for the record, and I'm going to do this every week, I'm going to say they go 3-3, and I really think that the Swallows are going to bounce back from their sweep against the Giants. They're going to win 2 at Jingu, and then we're going to take 2 out of 3 against the Bay Stars, but let's see. All right. So next week, you can call me out on if I missed on my prediction, and we can shake hands with Joe if he got it right as well. Thanks again, guys, for having for taking the time to be on the show.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye bye. Once again, thanks to my special guests this week, Joe and Patrick. It was great chatting with you guys about the Hanshin Tigers as well as baseball in general. A couple of great guys out there. And if you want to follow Patrick on social media, on Twitter, he is at NPB Tracker. It's all one word, no underscores, no periods, anything. And also his website is www.npbtracker.com. You guessed it. As far as I know, Joe does not have any social media outlets like that, but definitely you'll be hearing more from him as the season goes on. I plan to have him back several times as a guest or co-host on the show. If you have any questions or comments for me, or if you would like to guest on the podcast, or if you have any questions that you would like us to address on the podcast, or if you have any comments or whatever, feel free to share them with us. And, you know, the same ways as always, the email address is podcast@thehanshintigers.com. You can go to the Facebook page and leave a comment there. You can go to the podcast feed and leave a comment there. You can go to Facebook, like us on Facebook, and leave comments there. Wherever you drop a comment, we will find it and we will use it for the show. We'd love to hear from you. Once again, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at the Hanshin Tiger. Once again, the website, www.thehanshintigers.com, and facebook.com/Hanshin Tigers English News. It's always a pleasure, everybody, and we will see you in a week's time, or we'll hear from you, or you'll hear from us in a week's time as we talk about the series against the Yakult Swallows, as well as the one against the DeNA BayStars. Have a great week, everybody. Happy end of March, and happy belated Easter.